Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil, and we are recording this after a disappointing loss by the Heat, losing 101-84 to the Raptors. The Heat scored 33 points in the first quarter, just 51 points afterwards. Toronto shut them down, or they got in their own way. I don't know, David, but this, I do know that this is the first time that I started drinking during the podcast since, I think, the win streak.
Yeah, it's pretty disappointing, to be honest with you. It just felt like a game, you know, obviously at home that Miami could have found a way to win. The Raptors were without Serge Ibaka. You know, he was serving a one-game suspension for his quote-unquote fight with Robin Lopez. So you wonder whether or not Miami let this great opportunity slip past.
No, but Lowry either, because he's still injured, yeah.
Sure, yeah. But, I mean, you know, we faced them on a couple occasions already, and we've been able to pull out a victory. But this was without Deion Waiters, who's still nursing a strained ankle. And clearly his missing in action was making an impact there, because Miami just didn't seem to have it offensively. Despite the strength of that first quarter, they just – give credit to Toronto's defense, but Miami also struggled offensively, and I think that was a big problem.
Yeah, they made just 6 of their 23 three-pointers, which isn't good. This is the second time in 3 games that they just went cold from the three-point line.
Right.
The first one, of course, being against Portland. Miami was able to come out against Phoenix, but
not a good defensive team in Phoenix.
Right, so, exactly. Not a good team at all. But right. You know, 2 of these last 3 games, and of course they've been without Deion Waiters. Now, I don't know what the cause is. I don't know if that's more coincidental. It's something that, you know, we need to dig into a little bit more. But the point is, without Waiters, the drive and kick game is that much more difficult. Josh Richardson has been fine. He's not been spectacular. He's not been good. He's just been fine. But he's, you know, he's a big step down from Deion Waiters, who was playing it, you know, almost an all-star level throughout this recent stretch. And and not having him, who also helps Dragic, and Dragic has been struggling. All these factors combined make the drive and kick game that much more difficult. They make these threes maybe a little bit less open, and that's when you see the dip in percentage here.
Look, I mean, I'm trying to find some positivity out of tonight. It's not easy, but I think, you know, one of the questions we had going into the season was trying to define specific roles for players that we didn't really know too much about, you know, whether or not it was Justice Winslow or Josh Richardson. And in this case, Richardson has shown that he's probably not an effective starter. You know, I think he overhandles the ball a little bit too much. If he collects it on the perimeter, he'll tend to over dribble or dribble into a double team or something like that. You know, he's not as good a passer as Deion. Only 3 assists in 35 minutes, only 3 free throw attempts also. So he's clearly not getting to the line as effectively as Deion. Maybe he needs to get that confidence, yell and one a little bit more loudly. he gets stuck in his head. You know, we talked about it recently, and we think that, you know, that's a problem for him. And he's just not as aggressive. He doesn't get those calls. He won't get those calls because he's not as particularly aggressive. And that's a shame, because he does have, I think, elite level athleticism. He's got the length. He can finish over taller defenders, but he just doesn't know how to put the package together at times. And he'll, you know, like I said, dribble into double teams, rush a shot, not look comfortable. I saw a number of occasions, particularly in the first half, where he was holding on to the ball as the shot clock was expiring. And you go, what the hell are you doing? You know, find somebody or take a shot, just do something, and don't let, you know, and he wound up getting a shot off right as the shot clock expired. And it was too late. And unfortunately, you know, I just saw a number of occasions where he looked uncomfortable with the ball in his hands.
I 100% agree with you. I think that maybe the game still moves a little too quickly for him. He doesn't have the court vision that a Dragic or Waiters do to find open shooters, and I think that's why he holds onto the ball so long. He's just unsure of what to do with the ball in that situation. And you know, when you're a starting guard and you're asking, you've been asked to replace Dion Waiters like that, that's tough, you know. And I don't, and just to go back to Dragic too, you know, I don't know if he needs the ball more. I mean, he only took 18 shots. He had 7 assists, which was good. He only made 5 of his 18 shots. He wasn't shooting well. The team in general wasn't shooting well. This reminded me a lot of those early season Heat games where they were just missing a ton of shots at the rim, missing a bunch of open jumpers. Just seemed like they weren't a good shooting team.
Yeah.
And early in the season, you know, I think we explained that just by the simple fact that this isn't a very good talented roster. And talented rosters make shots, and untalented rosters don't make as many shots. And that was kind of the explanation. And then they kind of flipped that on its head by starting to make those shots, and Spoelstra finding a system that garnered more open shots. And they made the, and they started making that shot, those shots at the rim, and good shooting is contagious. Maybe that's what it is. Without Waiters there, there's not that and one confidence about this team anymore. Maybe there's not that just like I can make any shot type of confidence that Waiters has. Is Waiters like a leader? Is that what we're coming up with here?
You know, it's hard to equate the two, but he's certainly a driving force, even if it's not necessarily the emotional locker room leadership that you expect or that you normally equate with that terminology. But I mean, I'm thinking about in the 3.5 games that he's missed, he's at least made himself that much in millions per year, I think, based on the way Miami has looked in his absence.
Absolutely. I don't know what the timetable is for him to come back. There's been no certainty over it. The Heat can use him back. They've got 10 games left. Fortunately, with this win, or with this loss, they are still in 8th place in the East. There's still a game over Detroit and Chicago. Unfortunately, now they're 1.5 games back of Indiana and Milwaukee to move up in playoff seeding to potentially avoid the Cavs in the first round. But look, I mean, this was a tough loss. They go 3-2 in the homestand. Not as good as you probably wanted them to be. But it wasn't, it's not a killer, right? It's not, this isn't a killer loss.
But these were probably, when we broke down the schedule a week or so ago, maybe a little over that, you know, we thought the 5-game homestand was a crucial step for them because the schedule gets so murky over the next 10 games. They've got a 3-game road trip against Boston, who's playing at a very high level and competing, you know, ostensibly for the first seed in the Eastern Conference standings. Detroit, obviously, competing for that eighth spot, so that's going to be a crucial game for them. The Knicks, you never know what you've got with them. They do a home-and-home on Wednesday of next week and then again on Friday back here in the American Airlines Arena. But then they face tough teams. They face Denver, Charlotte, you know, who's also competing for a spot, Toronto again at Toronto, and then Washington and Cleveland. So, you know, obviously by that point, maybe things have shaken up a little bit more, you know, considerably, and maybe teams will be resting key players at that during that stretch. But Miami had to win at least one of these two games, you know, against Portland or tonight against Toronto. And unfortunately, they just couldn't find a way to do it. And James Johnson, I mean, we should point out that he really, really struggled. I don't know what it was. He looked aggressive. Maybe he was trying to prove too much to his former team. Just went 3 of 14 from the field. Finished with 10 points, 1 of 6 from three-point range. Not the kind of solid, efficient playmaking that we've seen from him in the recent stretch.
Yeah, I think the other side of that James Johnson coin here is that, you know, he does, he's got a Waiters-like confidence where he doesn't think anything that he's doing is the wrong play. And maybe there's a couple times where he forced the shot tonight or something like that. But he also, just like the whole Heat team in general, he missed a bunch of shots at the rim too. And it was just ugly. Yeah. I don't know what it was. But nobody really had a great game for Miami. There was 3 players that had a positive net rating. Whiteside, Roddy Magruder, whose defense was fantastic tonight. We should point that out. Whiteside had a really good game. I want to talk about him in a little bit. And Willie Reed, who had a nice game too. But one thing I wanted to point out as far as concerns or weaknesses about this Heat team, we've talked a lot about their strengths over this recent stretch. But in a loss like this, I think one of their main weaknesses here is it kind of reared its head, and that's been the disparity in free throws. Now, you and I have talked about this. We've kind of known about this, but kind of ignored it as well. They just don't get as many free throw attempts as their opponent. And maybe it's the Dragic situation where he doesn't get any calls, and maybe it's Waiters screaming and one too much to the point where refs avoid it. I don't know what it is. And it's the loss of Dwayne Wade, of course, who is just a master at getting it, so there's going to be a drop-off from one year to the next when you don't have Wade. But the Heat are one of the worst five teams in the NBA all season and since January 17th, the first of the 13-game win streak. They're a bottom five team in generating free throws. Toronto, yeah, on the same side, is one of the best four teams, sure, in generating free throws. So that was a big advantage that Toronto was able to play up to in this game. I don't know how much, I don't know how this is going to translate maybe into a potential playoff series if Miami's not able to get to the line and get easy points like that when defenses tend to tighten up in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how big of a deal that's going to be.
I think it is important because you definitely want that quote unquote superstar who's going to be able to generate those points. You know, we've seen that so many times from Dwayne Wade. I guess we kind of got used to the fact that we knew there was going to be somebody there who could get to the line pretty much whenever he wanted. He didn't always get the call. I know he argued it a little bit too much, as a lot of critics will point out. But the reality is that he got a lot of foul calls. He earned his trips to the line. We saw the difference with DeMar DeRozan tonight, 12 of 13 from the line. And I think it also highlights the fact that between the way that Paul George took advantage of him, Roddy Magruder is limited. For all that we appreciate of his effort and the tenacity with which he hounds guys around the perimeter, he's still somewhat undersized. DeRozan is a really, really good scorer. I mean, we have to give him credit there. Mm-hmm. His turnaround game is phenomenal. He'll get to the line as well. But clearly Magruder was overmatched, and that was a problem, and something that could rear itself again in the playoffs.
Should mention DeRozan, 40 points, back-to-back 40-point performances. He's getting hot at the right time for the Raptors. But the other problem is not only just getting to the line, but making free throws. Miami is one of the worst free-throw-making teams in the league. They got to the line 23 times. They made just 61% of their free throws, 14 and 23. Toronto only got 9 more free throw attempts, but made 11 more free throw attempts than Miami. So they're one of the best free throw shooting teams in the league, 78% that they made.
You can't put that on Whiteside either, who was 4 or 5 at the line. And I think to go into the numbers a little bit, you're looking at Luke Babbitt and again, Magruder, neither of whom get to the line very often. Between the two of them, you're looking at an average probably of 2 free throws per game. That takes a big chunk out of your starting lineup as far as your free throw usage or free throw percentage. And that's a problem, you know, because you get 2 guys in the starting lineup who aren't going to get to the line often. Even Ellington, when he's in the game, obviously he's running around the perimeter, running through screens. He's not a guy who gets to the line very often. So, you know, that's an issue. And James Johnson tonight was just 3 or 6. So I think, you know, if he knocks in a couple more, it's not going to make a huge difference as far as the overall score, but you know, it certainly helps Miami to get a couple of cheap points here and there.
Mentioned Hassan Whiteside. He sprained his ankle pretty late in the game, and on one defensive possession was noticeably limping and limited. After the game, Whiteside and Eric Spoelstra both said that they don't know how severe it is. Whiteside is already playing it down as not as severe as Deion Waiters' ankle injury, but I suppose that they'll test that again tomorrow. Hopefully there's no swelling, and hopefully that doesn't get agitated. But he had a really good game. I want to talk about that. But before we do that, listen, if your company is looking to reach a male audience between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast right here in this spot. Locked On Heat is listened to by 95% men, 74% between the ages of 18 and 44. According to a recent study, podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with a sponsor than from traditional media. Plus, our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listeners, so you get your value. Email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com to find out more about sponsoring Locked On Heat and engaging the audience you want to reach.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. BOOM.
So, Hassan Whiteside, let's just start with his stat line. 6 of 10 from the field, eight defensive rebounds, six offensive rebounds for a total of 14. I broke it up on purpose because six offensive rebounds is a lot.
Yes,
16 points, of course, two blocks, and here's the best part, two assists.
The assists, yeah, two of them. I mean, that's very impressive.
I thought it was a really strong showing from Whiteside, especially because you and I have talked about his matchup with other elite or even just sizable centers.
Yeah.
And he completely outplayed Jonas Valanciunas, who had just 2 points, and those were both just free throws. He missed both of the shots that he made. He didn't get the shot attempts that he probably wanted. Only 8 rebounds compared to 14 for Whiteside, and really was just not a factor in the game whatsoever. As good as Toronto was at making shots and everything that they were doing, Valanciunas was not the answer for them. And then even his backup,
Poeltl.
Poeltl, yeah, I forget his first name. Poeltl, 4 points, 6 rebounds, non-factor. Whiteside dominated this game for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, a good showing from him. And, you know, I think Willie Reed was also pretty solid in a backup role. He brought good energy, particularly in the first quarter there when they wanted to give Whiteside a spell. He came in and injected some nice energy there, had some good chemistry going as he was rolling to the rim, finishing up in a couple of nice lobs. He looked very effective. But, yeah, Whiteside, you know, the concern was based on what we saw from him against Valanciunas in the playoffs. We were wondering whether or not he'd be able to handle that kind of a matchup. And maybe that was egging him on. Maybe that was partly a motivating factor in tonight's performance. But he was just very effective, very efficient. So despite everything that went poorly for Miami, Whiteside's performance was not a negative.
Yeah, I mean, playing with 13 stitches, you know, that was a big moment for him, right? I mean, remember last year when he got I don't know the difference between the severity and injury, but last year when he got the gash in his hand, he was out for a long time, and this time he didn't miss any games. You know, maybe he's out there for his team a little bit more. I don't know what it is, but he showed a toughness when he sprained his ankle on that possession that I mentioned before. He stayed in the game and fought for a rebound, a hard rebound against Valanciunas. Like, that was a tough rebound to get for him, and he's showing a toughness. I think there's a trend also, here where... Go ahead.
Did you see that shoulder he took? I think when there was the collision with Josh Richardson when they were going for a loose ball, and Richardson kind of was chasing and didn't look up and see Whiteside trying to collect it as well, and he dropped his shoulder right into Whiteside's head and knocked him down for a little while. But he showed some tough to stay in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We talk about this pretty often every time Whiteside is playing another center like that. And I do recall the last few times he's really stood up to the challenge. And I'm hoping this is a trend that continues into the playoffs, because you look at somebody who that they might be facing, and there's some, you know, guys like Tristan Thompson, who's just kind of a role player in the regular season, but playoff Tristan Thompson's a real thing. Like, for some reason, he turns into Dennis Rodman in the playoffs. I don't know how that happens. But, you know what I mean? There's some other good centers in the playoffs that you're going to have to face. So this might be a good trend.
Well, I mean, I think we can kind of hedge that a little bit, as much as I hate to do so, but on a night that's been fairly negative. I mean, you have to look at the upcoming matchup against Boston, and you wonder whether or not Whiteside's going to be able – whether Whiteside can stay with Horford while he's drifting on the perimeter. I know they have Amir Johnson out there, but between – Horford and Kelly Olynyk, when he's in the game, obviously he's a prolific three-point shooter. I mean, those create matchup problems for Whiteside, so you wonder how he's going to be able to handle it.
He has been, since the Portland game, has been floating along the perimeter a little bit and trying a little bit more. So I don't know if Spoelstra had a talking to with him, but this is going to be a really good litmus test for him coming up. But for now, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat. Or by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.